Hello friends, welcome to Running and Fitness with Raj. This show will bring you exciting and interesting guests and give you specific and actionable advice on your running, fitness and general health. In today's episode, we will hear from coaches and runners Sri Krishna Natation and Arvind Kumar. Both are passionate about running in general and in September last year established a high-performance run coaching program called Renaissance Distance Project. Renaissance works with runners looking to make the next leap forward in their running journey. You will hear more about this project and their journey so far from each of them directly. Further in this episode, you will hear from coaches Chris and Arvind on their key training philosophy, which are around mileage and consistency with adequate amount of speed work, the importance of nasal breathing and the importance of strength training with proper weights. Coach Chris then talks about a few techniques around mental training, as well as certain specific aspects that women athletes need to focus on. In addition, of course, we will have our quiz as well as discussion with the guests on the resources they can recommend. So welcome to the show, Chris and Arvind. Very delighted to have you. And without further ado, let me hand it over to each of you to share with the listeners a little bit about yourselves, about your running journey and your coaching journey. So first, we will start with you, Chris.
Hey, Raj. Nice to be here and thanks for having us. I've been running, I would say, not so long ago, just since like about 2015. I picked up the sport in order to just lose some weight, to be honest. I was about 124 kilos when I started. Eventually started showing results and then I took the sport seriously. I've run a few marathons, I've run a few half marathons, and I'm a certified distance running coach and I'm a certified nutrition coach as well. And also the co-founder for the Renaissance Distance Project. So that's pretty much it in terms of introduction.
Arvind, what about you?
So yeah, my intro is probably also similar to Chris. So I've been running for about a decade now. I started in 2011 during my post-graduation days. So I basically took up running because essentially I've had a lot of health concerns per se right from my childhood. I've had to visit hospitals a lot of times. I'm an epilepsy patient and all that. So I've always had this inferiority complex or subpar feeling, right? So that's how I've always been throughout my life. And running per se has helped me understand my potential and ensure that I believe that, I can also really do something in life, right? So that's how I picked up running. I've been running for about, close to a decade now. I started running seriously in 2014, if I'm not wrong. I've been professionally coaching for about 4 years now. So I'm also a certified distance running coach, also a certified nutrition coach. And yeah, Chris and I, we've always been wanting to do something like this, and we don't know how it. We just spoke, was talking on a particular day, and suddenly, before we know, in 2 hours, the concept, we came up with the concept and we launched it right away, right? So yeah, I'm looking forward to this podcast today.
Thank you, Arvind. Of course, we will talk in greater detail about the Renaissance Distance Project later in the conversation. So I will start with you, Arvind, since you have been coaching for about 4 years. What I would like to start with is your underlying philosophy. Let's say, I come to you as a new athlete with maybe a little bit of exercise and running background. How do you approach your coaching? What are the foundational principles, the pillars of your coaching philosophy? Are there any specific coaches from the past that you draw upon a little more and things like that? And then we will go through some of the key steps as the athlete progress. So over to you, Arvind.
Okay, great question. So the first thing anybody who signs up with me, or rather my general philosophy is I tell them not to train based on a race, right? So I would rather advise them to train based on a particular goal rather than an event, right? So the first thing whenever someone comes and signs up with me, what I essentially do is I do not put them on a training plan directly, because for any coach, it takes some amount of time to understand where the individual stands, right? Irrespective of whatever information they share, for us to understand where that individual stands, we need more information. So the moment anybody comes to me, I put them on a simple base building plan. No pace, no HR, nothing. Just be out, run 3 or 4 days a week for a month or so. I observe, take that one entire month to understand where that individual stands, what is the current fitness level, then what can they manage, right? And from there, based on an individual goal, I put them on the plan they want. But I strongly emphasize on building a good aerobic base, right? Be it HR training, it again differs from an individual to individual, right? I'm a strong advocate of MAF, but the MAF is basically maximum aerobic function, right? By Phil Maffetone, right? So the MAF in general might not work for everybody. Let's say I have a beginner who runs at an 8-minute pace or a 9-minute pace. The concept of MAF will practically not work for them. They might feel very discouraged, right? So while I believe in MAF, I generally subscribe to a principle of, you know, running by effort. That's what I advocate for everybody to understand, learn how your effort feels when you run. So I typically suggest them to run about, let's say, about 60 seconds slower than your marathon pace, right? So that is a general prescription that I give. If somebody runs with a HR monitor, I put them on a MAF plan, right? So that's simple. But we've always believed in two things, consistency and mileage. While there are a lot of plans out there, you know, I've also trained with Run Less, Run Faster for quite some time. But after coaching, after you know, looking into a lot of information and research, I believe there is no other option than mileage, right? So what mileage to put might differ from individual to individual. Somebody might be comfortable with 50K. Somebody might be able to do 100K. That might be different. But consistency and mileage is the only way I think we can help somebody get better in running, right? So that's a simple philosophy that I follow. I follow Matt Fitzgerald's 80-20 principle. It's very simple for me. The entire mileage that somebody puts on a particular week, at least 80% of the mileage will be very easy. Let's say if somebody is running about 100 kilometers per week, at least 80 kilometers will be completely easy at a pace where you can converse, you can talk. In fact, I encourage people to try singing when they run, because many people don't actually understand whether they are able to, you know, whether they are able to run, whether they are running actually at a, you know, easier pace, right? Many people even feel that running at a typically, you know, slightly faster pace, they think they are doing at an easier effort. So I tell them to run as low as possible. And of course, 20% of the mileage, based on the individual goals, there will be speed work or threshold work that we figure out based on the individual, right? But I rely on mileage and consistency. That has always been my principle, Raj Gopal.
So coming to this point that you talked about with runners, many runners not really realizing or having a, you know, self-governing approach in terms of the speed. Often what the mistake we all make is that we go out too fast and then still believe we did it easy. One of the things that I have started practicing in the last 2-3 months is for my easy runs, try to stick to nasal breathing. And the moment I push myself a little bit, I have to perforce switch to mouth breathing. Do you have any views on that? Especially, you know, in places like Mumbai and Chennai where you are, where the humidity and temperature is also very high. Another thing that I noticed sticking to nasal breathing is that the requirement for water has also come down quite a bit, because you lose much less water when you are doing and strictly sticking to nasal breathing. So just want to know whether is that something that you advocate, any views around that?
Absolutely, yes, right. I'm a strong you know, advocate of nasal breathing. In fact, I'm a certified breathing coach. I follow a principle called oxygen advantage. So, you know, I conduct exclusive breathing sessions as well. To answer to your question, yes, I'm a very, very strong advocate of nasal breathing. In fact, the advice that I give everybody when they ask me about breathing is I tell them that your mouth is only for eating. Nose is meant for breathing. So that's the first thing I tell people, right? The problem with mouth breathing is that it creates a lot of chronic breathing issues for people. More than understanding whether we need to breathe through nose or you know, mouth, more than that, we need to understand what functional breathing means. There are two types of breathing. One is a shallow breathing where you breathe through your chest, and the other one is breathing through your diaphragm, through your tummy, right? So a simple option that I suggest everybody to is to keep one hand on the chest and one hand on the diaphragm and breathe normally and see which hand moves more, right? So to put it simply, first, I advocate diaphragmatic breathing. Try to help people breathe more better through diaphragmatic breathing. And once that is done, and I'm a strong component of nasal breathing, not just during workout, throughout the day, and it has made a huge difference to me and to all of my clients, and I'm a strong advocate of this.
So you talked about building a strong base initially and then moving on to more structured workouts like speed workout and things like that. At what point in your cycle do you start introducing your athletes to speed work and the more demanding type of workouts? And what is the kind of yardstick that you use to determine whether they are ready or not?
Okay, so while this might differ from individual to individual, right, the first thing I do is based on the individual's running history, right, and how much have they been running. With that, I would be able to do an educated guess based on what is the load that an individual can manage, right? But typically, I spend at least 2 or 3 months of minimum base building, right? While the base might differ from individual to individual, I typically do somewhere around 8 weeks is what I would say, 8 weeks to 12 weeks based on the fitness levels. But by 8 weeks, I think I slowly start introducing speed work. We'll probably start with slow threshold work. I always believe in building speed at the shorter distances before going into longer distances. So I might not have a lot of threshold work, but I will have a lot of, small speed work, let's say like 100 meters. Many people don't even do 100 meters and 200 meters, right? In fact, that is one of the staple workouts that we do in our Renaissance team, right? We start with 200s or 400s. We don't even go to 600s or 800s because I don't see anybody doing 200s and 400s at all. But that, you know, helps you create, inject a lot of speed to you, right? So we start with smaller workouts, 200s, 400s, try to inject speed. Do that for about 5 to 6 weeks. And irrespective of what distance anybody wants to train, right? As long as it is not an ultra, anybody says, I want to run a faster half marathon or a faster marathon, right? Irrespective of whatever they say, I always start with shorter distances, build speed over 5K, 10K. And the moment you build speed over 5K and 10K and you move on to the marathon segment, you are a completely different person, right? I see people running marathons right in and right out, running 4 marathons, 5 marathons, training for one cycle, running a marathon, and again going back to the marathon. What people don't understand is when you run a marathon, you do a lot of aerobic work, you do a lot of threshold work. So you essentially lose a lot of speed or your speed is plateaued. So for you to do well at the marathon, you need to change base. When you're doing a lot of threshold work, you need to come back to speed work. Same way, when you're doing a lot of speed work, you might have lost some endurance. You have to go back to base building. So we keep playing around. We typically don't recommend more than a marathon per season.
Just to add to that, there's 8 week base, right? That will also tell you how serious you are with your running.
One question with you, Arvind, is asking the question around strength training. At what point do you start weaving it in and how do you apportion the time? Because obviously everybody is time limited and suppose somebody has, let's say, 5 hours to devote to training. How do you apportion strength training and run training? What's the proportion?
Okay, so strength training is always a tricky concept, right? A lot of people believe that strength training is a luxury and it is not something that is required. And hey, I'll be honest, even at one point in my training life, I thought strength training is not something that is required and running is more than enough, right? But I've definitely, with experience and training, I've come to realize that strength training is the most important part of a training cycle. And I don't really care even if someone skips, running or, doesn't achieve a particular mileage. And not just related to running, even to lead a normal lifestyle, I am a huge proponent of strength training. And when we say strength training, right, I again make it very clear saying that strength training is not doing body weight work. While body weight work, I will probably consider that, as working out, but I wouldn't consider that as training unless you are putting in work for, let's say, 8 weeks or 10 weeks with a particular structure program. So when I say strength training, I always say lifting weights. So, and again, when I say weights, it is not the neoprene weights that the 1 kg, 2 kg weights that we lift, right? So I'm not referring to that. Proper weight training with barbells, kettlebells, dumbbells, whatever you do. I would typically recommend two sessions, three sessions is probably a bit more in your peak cycle. So 2 sessions is definitely mandatory every week. And in the off season, I would probably say 3 or 4. Again, there is no single formula. It depends on the individual, but I would at least start with two sessions a week. And I'm a huge proponent of the big fives. I always recommend that to everybody, irrespective of barbell, dumbbells, or kettlebells. Squat, deadlift is a staple in our training. Barbell rows or kettlebell rows, military press, and bench press. So these five, we don't do anything new or nothing fancy. we don't have a lot of different programs. Our entire training cycle will probably have only two or three workouts. We keep doing the same thing over and over again. Like running, how do you, the way you get more benefit only by running more, the same way you benefit out of strength training only by doing the same thing over and over again. So that's how we do it. And I would recommend probably two or three sessions a week, depending on the individual, Rajagopal.
Okay, thank you, Arvind. That now to you, Krish. So Arvind talked about the physical part of training, the strength training, the aerobic base building, speed work, etc. We all know that mental training is a very, very crucial aspect when it comes to any endurance sports. So can you share some thoughts on how do you approach it yourself personally as well as with your athletes? Are there some key techniques that you use, some mantras? How important is visualization, for example?
Pretty interesting question. I know that most of us really train our bodies, physically speaking, but hardly we pay attention to the mind. But a lot of the training that we do physically also requires a lot of mental strength. What do I mean by that is, first of all, I think mental strength really starts with it. If you are not intrinsically motivated, you are not going to cross the finish line in one piece, at least mentally. You know, physically, you will be broken. I mean, we all will be broken. We all have run marathons. If someone is going to say they did not feel that they have been broken down after a marathon, then probably they didn't push enough. But the point that to sustain the whole 18 to 20 weeks of the training regimen, you got to keep asking yourself why you're doing this. And that's also one of the reasons why we insist on the whole base building. You know, when someone joins us, 8 to 10 weeks, they're going to be on base building. And I've seen people really going nuts. So it starts with base building. The base building actually gives you a lot of areas in the head to work on. Why are you doing this? Every slow run, you have a lot of time to think about why you're doing this. Because you will get really bored. You know? And the second aspect of the thing is, to me personally, I cannot put myself through some of these really tough situations. Like, for example, some of the key tempo workouts I will intentionally do on a treadmill without any music. You know, that really kills your head, you know, because you're going to be absolutely uncomfortable, you know, with the pace that you're going to go, because your race pace, technically speaking, and definitely it's treadmill, which means that you're going to get bored without a saying. And I will take a really long tempo session. In fact, when I was running in Chicago, one of the 16 kilometer tempo session was on treadmill. And without music, I intentionally put my through all these things. Because when you run a race, especially towards the last part of the race, especially after the so-called magic, after the 32nd kilometer or the 35th kilometer, when you really win yourself by just your strong head, not really the body, because your body is almost broken down by the point. Put yourself through some of the tougher sessions on the treadmill. That's number one. And number two being that is, I mean, this is not my original idea. In fact, there was this podcast where Scott Fauble and Rich Roll, they were discussing. And Scott Fauble says really nicely, when it comes to an elite segment, these guys, they really don't think, how is the weather? What is the shoe I'm wearing? You know, is this feeling a little uncomfortable because I'm wearing this singlet for the day? No, they don't really think at all. Unfortunately, what happens is when we get into the whole uncomfortable zone, we will start finding excuses on why we are feeling uncomfortable. Like, for example, when we are on the 38th kilometer, when it's not really comfortable anymore to hold the race pace, you will start thinking, okay, I'm feeling something really teeny-weeny in my shoes that's not really making me comfortable to hold this pace. My thing is, you have to find your way to ask your mind to shut up. There was a point where I used to write in my wrist before the race, shut up mind. You know, I'm not even joking. I used to write it because I used to go through the same problem, right? Give very, very less room for your head to get into the game. Okay. And that comes from a lot of practice. In fact, I would highly recommend everyone to read this book called Endure. Mind has the capacity. And, you know, it's usually so connected to your central nervous system. It actually acts as a gate when you have a fear. And this book talks about how to open up that gate. For the last part of it, I mean, you asked about visualization. I personally am a big fan of visualization, especially during the early part of the segment. A lot of people try to visualize during the later part of the segment. I would really not recommend that, because the later part of the segment, when you start visualizing, it also invokes a lot of self-doubt. So last 2 weeks is not the time to visualize. I would say somewhere between your 7th to 12th week of a training seminar is a beautiful place to visualize. And it's extremely important. But I do visualize the night before the race. And that's personally for me. You know, it kind of puts me in a really good mood in terms of the race the next day morning. But that's pretty much the idea on visualization, how it really helps. I mean, if you have a follow-up question, I would be happy to take it.
No, that's been very comprehensive, actually, in terms of all the ideas around mental training. And essentially what you are highlighting is that the discomfort, the difficulties that you can potentially or that you will face in a race, it is very important to start simulating that during your training. And getting used to that discomfort. That's number one. In terms of visualization, what you are saying, do it early in your training cycle. Don't leave it till too late. And then whether you spend some time visualizing on the eve of the race is very much a personal choice. So those were very useful, Krish. Thanks a lot. And Arvind, we are coming back to you now. You touched upon your training philosophy. You talked about some of the key pillars around it. What are still some of the mistakes, misconceptions that you have to deal with in your athletes?
Yeah, some of the common misconceptions that I see, right? Like how we spoke earlier, I really like to call this a favorite term of mine. I call it intensity blindness, right? People really don't understand the effort they are putting in, right? So the first thing I try to help people is to really gauge effort. Understand how do you run. I introduce a small scale. On a scale of 1 to 10, I help them understand how to gauge effort, right? So the most important problem, if somebody asks me to cite a difference between an elite athlete and a normal athlete, one of the most common differences that I see is the intensity at which these runners run, right? So that is one of the most common mistakes that I see. So the first thing I tell people is to slow down. And many people don't really, even do that. So I set them a benchmark, tell them to run at a particular pace. Let's say if somebody's marathon pace is 6 minutes per kilometer, I tell them to run not slower than 7 minutes per kilometer, right? So gauging effort, I give three options. People who do not have a GPS device, I suggest them to run by effort. Rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 when they run. On easy runs, to keep it less than 3, right? When I say 3, 3 is probably somewhere where you can really talk well. You are breathing through your nose. That is, you are very comfortable. You can do this as long as possible, right? So that is the zone I typically recommend. For somebody who is using a HR monitor, of course, I follow the MAF principle. 180 minus age is a simple logic that we use. Of course, I have some cushion for people who are more than 50. Or else pace, which we follow, a common principle that we follow in our group, 60 seconds slower than your marathon pace, right? That is a common problem, common suggestion that we do. Apart from that, one of the most common mistakes, while many people have started to finally understand that mileage is something that is important, I also see a lot of people just putting in base mileage over in and over out, right? Because for example, I know a lot of people who for 8 months, all they do is just aerobic miles, and 4 months they get into a training cycle and again get back, right? So while mileage is good, we need to understand that aerobic miles is just going to help you maintain your fitness levels and probably help you increase your fitness by a very, very marginal level if you're building mileage. But to build fitness levels at any point, we need to have anaerobic work. We need to have speed work built in the system. So irrespective of whatever season you are in off season, you are in peak season, you are in the middle of race, does not matter. At any point of time when you're in a training cycle, speed work is an essential part of training. So that is something that I see, which is really missing in a lot of plans. And something which we really don't talk about is rest and sleep. Many people think that rest and sleep is not something that is important, especially the amateur athletes. I tell everybody that rest and sleep is part of the plan. If you are resting on a particular day, it means you're not missing training. It means you're actually training on that particular day also. And as far as sleep is concerned, before going into all your protein shakes, recovery socks and all that, if you're not even sleeping 5 or 6 hours a day, then it really doesn't make a big difference, right? What kind of socks you wear or what kind of protein shake you drink. So these are some of the common misconceptions that I see in athletes, and I try to change these for all of them whenever I can.
Yeah, I cannot stress the importance of rest and recovery. And to that, I will also add, things like doing proper foam rolling and, taking care of your body. Because clearly all your development actually comes through your during your rest phase and not during your stress phase, right? So suppose you are working out for an hour or an hour and a half, what you do in the balance 22 to 23 hours is far more important than what you really have achieved, because otherwise you are not going to see the progress that you need to. So thank you for that, Arvind. Coming back to you, Krish, as we have also observed that women are increasingly taking to a lot of endurance activities. They are, participating more in races and other endurance activities. So what are some of the specific areas that you focus on with your women, female athletes?
See, I think one of the first area where they really get hit when a female athlete get on board. Actually, you know what? We will do this for anyone in athlete. But more prominently for female athletes, because they are very prone for low bone density and low hemoglobin. So in terms of training structure, I don't think we really do anything different, because I train quite a few female athletes as well. I would say that there is no difference when it comes to training, but a lot of difference come in the way they recover. The nutrition for them has to be a little different than men.
So in your athletes, just to expand that, can you give a few examples when you talk about for female athletes, you look at slightly different sort of nutrition or recovery protocol? Yeah. It'll be quite interesting to hear some examples for that.
No, I mean, like I said, everything is driven by the blood profile. If an athlete is going to be running low on iron, that's a very common one, by the way, especially among the female athletes that I've dealt with. At least the first thing is to fix them. So we have to start looking at food that's going to give them, and if it's required, if it's prescribed by the doctor, add some hemoglobin supplement into it. But unfortunately, what happens is it's just not one nutrition aspect that goes down. If iron goes down, after some point of time, the magnesium goes down. If magnesium goes down, your sleep and your stress, stress goes up, and your sleep cycle gets messed up. And when you get your sleep cycle messed up, the iron goes down even further. So you see the cycle over here. It just one will start affecting the other, because the body is always continuously trying to compensate for the lack of things that we give. The other area, especially for all the female athletes that I have trained or I am training, I am a big, big advocate on strength training. I think a female athlete needs more than a man, because the muscle loss for them is far quicker than men. And this is not me saying, this is just science. Okay. A lot of studies say the same thing. Now, the other thing is, naturally, I will ask anyone to take in more greens, because we all, as endurance athlete, we want our carbs to be at prime and be ready for the next training cycle. But unfortunately, what happens is we kind of off-balance our acidic profile, the pH value that a body should hold. Let's call that value as X. Now, if your system has too much of acidic food, your body will compensate by some of the natural base component that your body has. Like for example, your skeletal muscle and the bone are the biggest suppliers of calcium. So when you have a lot of acidic-based food, and what the body does is to maintain the pH value, it'll draw the calcium from the bone. It'll draw the whole glucosamine from the skeletal structure. So eventually, it throws your body off balance by taking what's available in your body. Now, if you don't feed that back in, naturally, it'll lead to other things like, your bone density will go down. It'll lead to stress fracture, or, it'll lead to, micro tissue tear and so on and so forth. It's a very, very small thing, but when you don't pay enough attention to it, the impact that it gives during a 18, 20 weeks training cycle is just far beyond what you can imagine. Not just the training cycle. To have a healthy living, this is extremely important.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. So let's move on. I run a quiz segment with my guests, which is just a change of pace from all the what I call heavy training and exercise talk. So basically three questions each, and we will quickly run through that. So are you ready?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Before we start the quiz, I want to let listeners know that all the resources being discussed here are included in the show notes. So do refer to those links for further information. I also request all of you who are listening to please subscribe to the podcast and spread the word. Please also leave a review on iTunes as it will help enormously to grow the show. Now to the quiz. So I will start with you, Chris. First question on obviously marathon race, which is we talked about Kipchoge running a sub 2 last year in Vienna in October. But that was not really his first attempt at sub 2. He had attempted this in May 2018 as well. Do you remember where that was?
Yeah, it's Monza, Italy.
Okay, excellent. Okay.
I'm a big fan of Formula One, so I can't forget it.
Okay, that's good. Coming to you, Arvind, you talked a bit about weight training. So a question on weights. So when we lift weights, we often have somebody watching over us and probably helping with the setup, etc. What is this person called?
I can answer this well because, you know, in fact, in training, we have a separate session on this as to basically spotting, right?
Okay. It's called a spotter. Yeah. Back to you, Chris. What is the name for the fat around your vital organs like liver, kidney, etc.?
Visceral fat, of course.
Okay. So a lot of discussion these days about, you know, transmittable diseases and all that. So question for you, Arvind, this: what is truly the last disease which the world has truly eradicated?
Not a big fan of all this. I don't know. So polio, smallpox.
Well, actually, it's smallpox. Polio is technically not still eradicated. Back to you, Chris. So Usain Bolt is probably the greatest sprinter of all time. He, however, lost his last race. Do you remember who he lost it to? Who won that race?
No, but I do remember he pulled his hamstring or something like that. I don't remember.
Okay. Arvind, do you remember?
Honestly, no, I don't. I'm a bit very bad with all this. So, no, I don't.
Okay. So that was actually Justin Gatlin. He won the gold at the 2017 London World Championship, which also happened to be Usain Bolt's last race. And last question, first we'll start with you, Arvind. So we all know that Tokyo Olympics has been postponed. Do you remember which was the first Olympics in modern Olympics, that is, which was cancelled?
Oh, no, that's a tricky question. No, to be honest, no, I'm not sure. Maybe this is the first time? I'm not sure.
It's during the First World War. So all you have to now pick up is year during the First World War. So
second was 1934?
No, First World War. So that would be earlier, right?
Every 4 years, so somewhere around 1915, 1920?
1916. So 1916 is the answer. Okay. So before we let you go, each of you, can you please share some of the materials that you refer to, books that you like, websites that you follow, podcasts, YouTube channels, blogs? So I'll start with you, Chris. Maybe, you know, two, three names which our listeners can follow, and I'll obviously include it in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, with respect to books, I'm a big bookworm. I would say Endure, definitely a must. That's number one. North by Scott Udick. It was a really fascinating read and I completely loved it. And My Marathon by Frank Schroeder. That was the last book I read and wow, I was simply blown away. So with respect to books, those are my three recommendations. Oh, there's one more book that's called The Tao of Montessori. On leadership and family. It covers a lot of aspects. And I believe that it's a very, very unique book. With respect to podcast, my favorite is the Morning Shakeout podcast by Mario Fraley. I love Billy Yang, like left, right, and center. That guy is just too freaking good. So Billy Yang's podcast is definitely yes. The third would be a little tricky one. I have quite a few favorites for the third spot. I should say, I'm going to combine a few. I like Rambling Runner. I like Le Rundown. I like Sweat Elite. I like Lindsay Haynes, you know, have another one. Let me just stop with it. So those are some of the podcasts that I usually listen, especially on my easy runs.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. That's quite a comprehensive list. I'll include it all.
And just one more. All Essays by Peter Bromka.
Okay, got it.
Something else.
Peter Bromka. Okay, got it. Yeah. And what about you, Arvind?
So I'm not a voracious reader like Chris, but I still do read a lot of stuff. So something that really appeals to my heart, I have quite a few books that I read over and over again. Dare to Run by Amit Chetty is something that I really love. I keep reading that over and over again. Eat to Run by Scott Jurek. I've always been a huge fan of Scott Jurek. He's a role model of mine, a very, very favorite book of mine. And of course, Rich Roll's Finding Ultra and Rejecting Middle Age, a very, very inspiring book that I, you know, keep trying to read more and more again. And apart from that, some of the regular books that I really love to read, Peak Performance by Brad Stelberg, a brilliant book that everybody should read. Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. Every time I feel something is wrong, I just tell myself to suck it up and go ahead, go out and do that. It is basically all of that is from David Goggins. And a book, something that which I really love, not part of running, an autobiography, but I strongly recommend everybody to read, is Abhinav Bindra's autobiography. It's called A Shot at History, a book very, very detailed about what goes into a life of an athlete, like how Chris spoke about the why needs to be really strong. So he addresses a lot of aspects in that. A lovely book that I would recommend everybody to read. And I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but yeah, I'm always a big fan of Morning Stakeout podcast and Billy Yang, right? So that is pretty common everywhere. And as far as subscription is concerned, yeah, please follow the Renaissance Distance Project as well. You will get a lot of content from us as well. So yeah, that's some of the shows that we follow regularly.
Okay, so that's actually a good segue to my next question. So can you please share some details about the Renaissance Distance Project, which will be helpful to our listeners? Thank you.
Chris and I launched Renaissance Distance Project somewhere around September last year. So we've always had this idea of building a high performance team, a team that is known for their work ethic. We don't really care how fast somebody is. Our primary goal is the work ethic, somebody who can grind in day in and day out, irrespective of whatever is happening around them, right? So that's the whole idea of putting in a set of like-minded athletes who train on a daily basis. And we really handpick our athletes. It is not that everybody can be a part of the group. We have a particular set of standards that we want people to get in. To start with, we have only people who run a sub-2 who can be part of the group. But having said that, not everybody can be a part of the group. Chris and I really spend a lot of time to pick up people as part of the group. We're also trying to help people who really have a lot of potential, people from tier 2, tier 3 cities. Chris and I have been working with quite a few people, trying to support them in terms of nutrition and all that, and their monthly living and all that. So we try to, basically the money that we get from training athletes who train with us, we use that money to support the other athletes who are with us, right? So that's how we are trying to sustain the project. Very, very exciting, because the group is very inspiring and motivating. Everybody goes out and, the kind of work everybody puts in. So, it's really wonderful that we have been part of this group, right? So that's a brief introduction about us. And yeah.
Okay. And where can people find you? What's your, what's the best way to connect with either of you personally, as well as with the Renaissance Distance Project?
Chris, go for it.
They can directly message us. That's the easiest way to do it. Or on Facebook. Also, somewhere towards the end of the year, we're going to open up the applications. And someone wants to, they can go for it. But follow us on Facebook and Instagram to know more about what's the procedure for the application. But you guys can always reach either me or Arvind directly over any of these platforms.
Okay, thank you. And thank you very much for both your time, Chris and Arvind. This was most helpful. I will include all the contact details as well on the show notes so that people can reach out to you. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Raj. It's been really a pleasure.
Good luck to your podcast.
Thank you very much to all the listeners. As I mentioned, all the resources discussed here are included in the show notes. So do refer to those links for further information. You can reach out to me on my social media handles, which are Running and Fitness with Raj on both Instagram and Facebook. And you can also email me on runningandfitnesswithraj@gmail.com. Please let me know if you have any questions or specific guests you would like to see on the show. I also request you all again to please subscribe to the podcast and spread the word. Please also leave a review on iTunes, as it will help enormously to grow the show. We will continue to bring you exciting and interesting guests and give specific and actionable advice. Stay safe, stay healthy, and till the next show, goodbye.